Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 320, recorded on January 28th, 2017. Enjoy! Alright, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer and Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey guys, how are you doing?
Doing well. It's awesome to have the whole team together.
Yeah.
Glad Jeff didn't get eaten by didn't get mauled by a bear and then have to go track it down in the snow and kill it.
Well, it wouldn't have been a bear, it would have been a mountain lion. The bears are hibernating right now.
Good to know. I'm glad you're on top of these things. It sounds like something it's important to understand if you're doing
whatever. Jeff was away from all civilization.
It sounds like fun. You were snowshoeing?
Including cell towers. Yeah. Apparently.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome. We had to snowshoe into the cabin, which was lots of fun. And I say that genuinely, it was lots of fun. And then when nature called, I had to put the snowshoes back on and snowshoe over to the outhouse. And I had to dig the door to the cabin out, had to dig the door to the outhouse out. And the snow was deep enough that just the trip back and forth from the cabin to the outhouse, that was snowshoe time.
Cool. Wow. Well, it was 75 degrees here, so.
If we added all the degrees together from yesterday and today, I think we had 75 total.
Cool. All the
if we added all the degrees together.
All right. Well, awesome. I'm glad you're here. So let's talk about my favorite thing, second favorite thing that happened this week, which is HBO Go.
Jeff's happy too, I think.
Oh my God, yes.
They got support for single sign-on and the TV app. So the single sign-on thing doesn't really affect me because Comcast is still being lazy. But
it doesn't affect anyone because none of the big carriers are doing single sign-on.
But being in the TV app is awesome because anybody who has used HBO's, I guess it's really primarily the TV app, we all know that it's garbage and it's impossible to read anything that happens in that thing. So now we don't have to worry about that.
The iPad app is kind of not all that great either.
Not as terrible, but still not so great. So very happy.
Browsing on any of these things is any apps, like even Netflix, Amazon, any of them, if you just want to browse or something, pretty cruddy.
Well, it's not so great to browse on Apple's TV app either.
No, I know. I'm just saying, as a whole, anything that's doing content, video, audio, no one's kind of cracked like the right experience. And it makes me wonder sometimes, is there an ideal experience for doing it?
I think TiVo has gotten closer than anyone.
Probably, yeah. Does anybody have TiVo still? I guess people do. I haven't owned a TiVo or used a TiVo in a decade, probably.
Yeah, I haven't had one probably, about the same time. But there's still a lot of people that are big-time TiVo fans. And for those people, hey, they've got an interface that's pretty good.
The TV app has promise. The problem is, and now that Go is there, that this solves a little bit of it, is content. It's just integration of enough stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and without Netflix really supporting the TV app, I don't think it has much value for very many people.
It'd be cool when Netflix gets in there.
Well, Netflix
Amazon needs to get in there too, and that's never going to happen. They need to get on the Apple TV. And if I was Apple, I would just like do whatever they want, basically. It'd be like, okay, what's the deal?
Give Tim Cook's.
You want to sell subscriptions,
something?
And we take a zero cut, fine. Just get in here.
Yeah. Yes, Apple needs to do something because Amazon needs to be there. Netflix needs to man up or girl up or whatever up, pony up, I don't know, unicorn up, and get on the TV app in a real way, not this old library content, but the only way to see it is by searching, and then you still can't see anything else. And
do you think Amazon actually did anything to enable that, or is that all Apple? Like, is that just Apple sort of hiking their way in?
I think Netflix did something, because it all happened on the day that they released an update that all it said was bug fixes. So I think they did it, not Apple.
It's weird to implement it like that, though. Like, why go half A, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Why?
Well, but I know a ton of people are excited about HBO Go. Why HBO Go? Why HBO Now got in there and HBO Go didn't is baffling. I'd love to talk to an engineer or somebody who was involved to explain what the problem was.
It's probably a very, very, like an understandable yet dumb reason. Like,
I bet it's contracts.
Yeah, it was probably
that
like
would,
one.
That would be my guess. Contracts they contracted with the cable one, providers.
Yeah, because the HBO Now app, that's just HBO, so they can do whatever they want. But I bet they had to make sure that they had all the contract stuff right for HBO Go.
I have a feeling
because
it's a lot more mundane.
Because
than
HBO
that.
Go is inside those proprietary like cable DVRs and stuff like that, right? That's probably what they were worried about.
Yeah, probably something like that.
Perhaps. Apple seeded a beta of tvOS 10.2. And the interesting thing in that is that there is an accelerated scrolling option, which allows users to scroll through content much more quickly, which is awesome. We definitely need that. And so the idea is, I guess if you do several large swipes, the remote will automatically switch into that mode. So I haven't updated mine to the beta. I don't really want to do that. But I'm guessing it's going to be something akin to, you know, on the old iPod, where if you start scrolling fast, it like throws you into alphabet scroll mode instead of just the,
right.
You know what I mean? And then there's also if you swipe on the far right side of the remote, it will navigate, indices. So I'm guessing if, you know, you're just on a list of alphabetical stuff, it'll go A, B, C, D, that sort of thing.
I still want them to kind of give me a tabbed interface where I can like separate different content, different apps, into like screens.
It's never going to happen. Never going to happen.
You know, I remember when you first mentioned that, and the idea has grown on me. I would love it, and yet Michael's definitive answer of never going to happen, I fear, is right.
They wouldn't have put that.
Yeah, but look,
without
now
that TV app,
some buggy scrolling thing, because people have too many damn apps on one screen, so it's a pain in the butt to scroll up and down.
That TV app it tells you right there. It tells me that they don't expect people to go to that screen anymore.
Oh, like the springboard launcher screen?
Yeah, they're not. They don't.
But
want
that doesn't
to
solve
anymore.
That doesn't solve the problem for apps like games.
They put it in a folder. And
I'm
that's
playing
tapped.
More games on my Apple TV, by the way.
Yeah.
And I will say once again that Nimbus SteelSeries controller is freaking awesome.
Mm.
You know, if Lego games would come to Apple TV, I'd buy one of those Nimbus controllers, and good luck getting
now.
Away from my TV ever again.
They could think? Now that they've changed the stupid app.
Oh yeah, that's right. Now that the app restrictions have changed, they can do it.
Yeah, I bet you that was the holdup for them. I bet you those games will get ported.
What was the restriction?
The restriction to 250
megabytes
has been lifted. So the restrictions are in line with other iOS apps.
Oh.
So that there's no differentiation now between iOS and tvOS apps as far as size and extra data you can download.
Very nice.
Yeah, so an app can on Apple TV can now download right up front up to 4 gigs of data.
4 gigs. How much space is the... Is it
32 is the smallest one.
So it's 32 and 64.
Seriously? That's crazy. That's a lot of gigs. I thought it was like 4 and 8.
Nope.
I'm pretty sure I bought the bigger one, too.
There was a big argument from, you're right, that's a lot of gigs, because especially when they had the 200 megabyte cap on any app storing data, a lot of people were like, well, why would I pay $100 extra to get the 60? Is it $100 extra to get the 64?
I think so.
Or $50?
I don't remember what it cost.
A lot of people were like, why would I pay extra to get 64 when 32 is going to be more than I would ever need?
Yeah, and well, see, I was thinking something's going to change, and I'll be sorry if I don't have 64.
Yep. That was what I thought, too. And here we are.
It's a $50 difference. It's $149 or $199. Yep. And I think I have the 32, honestly. But
it's still a lot of gigs. Even if you've got 4 gigs. The only concern is if, like, Netflix and those other apps are going to start, like, using up that, like, storing up that much data locally.
Hmm.
And not providing you a way to manage, because you really don't have a way to manage any cached data for an app.
I think you can, to some extent, in settings. Right. I don't know how much control the developer has over that, but
that's what I mean. I don't know that they do. But
so there were a few updates that came out. 10.2.1 came out, which is kind of a big deal because not really any outward facing changes, but a lot of bug fixes, a lot of security things patched. Apple was pretty vague about it, about as they are, you know, they don't want to give too much information to people who, you know, if they can figure out what the exploit was, you don't want them, taking advantage of devices that haven't been updated. But it's, I think it was over a dozen security fixes, a lot of them found by Google's Project Zero. And they were kind of buried in there. They weren't apparent, but they can do a lot of damage. They can do full takeovers of your device, deletion of data, harvesting data, whatever someone would want. So it's a good idea to update to 10.2.1. Let's see, tvOS 10.1.1 was updated for the Apple TV for the 4th gen. No outward things. I'm guessing it's the same set of bug fixes. And the watchOS 3.1.2 update that was pulled, a day or two after it was released a month or two ago, and because it was bricking watches. And watchOS 3.1.3 is now out, which includes bug fixes for messages, notifications, activity, maps, calendar, and more. I'm sorry, that was 3.1.1. As far as 3.1.3, I'm not sure. Security, probably.
Yep.
Probably.
What else? Oh, the big thing, 3.1.3, it adds SiriKit. It adds SiriKit to your watch.
Oh, you know the other thing it adds that you don't get to see yet?
What's that?
Theater mode.
Yeah, the theater mode. What the heck is a theater mode?
Okay, so theater mode is it's a mode you put the watch in where it mutes it, and it makes it so that the screen doesn't do wake on raise. So you still get notifications that come in, but your screen is basically shut off unless you tap on it or press the digital crown. That's theater mode.
So they say
that when you're in a darkened theater, the idea is you're in a darkened theater, you're not going to disturb other people with your hand moving around.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, but they said it was supposed to be in 3.1.3, but it's not in 3.1.3 for whatever reason.
Yeah. So
coming soon.
So it's there. It's just not active. And I've heard a couple of people say that they want to use it at night because they're using their Apple Watch for sleep tracking. And now they won't have to worry about the display kicking on and potentially waking up their sleeping partner.
That's well, nice. And using more battery.
Yeah.
When do people who do that charge their watch?
In the morning.
Like when they're showering.
Take it off while you're getting ready. You get in the shower, take off, put it on the charger, get in the shower, brush your teeth, And pretty much by the time you're done with everything, it can be charged back up.
Huh. Interesting.
For any power that was lost overnight, at least.
And during the day.
Apple Watch juices up pretty fast.
Yeah, that's good. Speaking of which...
you got to use the...
So there was a report from...
Wait, go back. What's Siri Kit?
Siri Kit's important because it's the thing that lets third-party apps do Siri things. So if I want to Venmo somebody some money, I can do that with my phone. But
you couldn't do that with a watch.
I didn't realize I couldn't do that with my watch. I had tried a few times and I just went, stupid Siri. But I guess it wasn't a feature that was on the watch. It was only on your phone, but now I haven't tried it, but allegedly you can, now do all those things on your watch too.
Cool.
It's very cool. Yeah.
Now for those things, do developers need to update their apps for the Apple Watch?
I would assume so.
I don't know.
Siri Kit, I mean, any of the kits are dev kits for developers. So I'm assuming it just means they've added Siri Kit as a watch to watchOS. It probably wasn't available in the dev for watchOS before, where it was for iOS. So the question would be, if they've already integrated it into iOS, do they get it for free with watchOS? Possibly. It might just be a recompile and release kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That would be nice. Make developers' jobs a little easier.
Yeah. I mean, assuming all the calls and stuff are the same, I would imagine it might be just that.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, okay. So iPhone 8, speaking of charging up your watch, so we've been talking about the idea of Apple using some Energys's radio frequency technology to charge the next generation iPhone. Let's see here. However, in an investor note from Copperfield Research, they outline in a very succinct and good way why they believe Apple is not going to be doing the radio frequency power transmission, and instead believes that we're going to see inductive charging, which makes a heck of a lot of sense, because number one, inductive charging has been around for a long time. Apple's already doing it on the watch. We talked last week about the fact that Apple has recently partnered with Lite-On for wireless charging bridge rectifiers, which didn't make a lot of sense to me, because if you're using Energys's technology, you wouldn't need to have those individual components. A bridge rectifier is used for taking an AC signal and rectifying it to a DC signal, which you need to do with inductive charging. And so that points to inductive charging. Apple has in the
past... Keep in mind, Energys has an inductive charging technology too that's already approved by the FCC and available for use.
Well, so the point that this guy's trying to make is that if Apple's going to be using some kind of tech from Energys, they would very likely be supplying a whole system. Apple wouldn't necessarily need to source their own parts.
Right. No, I get that. Yeah. But
yeah, I mean, they could be.
If Apple ever plans, because the true wireless charging from Energys, whatever we're going to call them, is likely not going to be. I mean, they're saying it's going to be available by the end of 2017. There's a lot of potential obstacles for that, including they have to get a different kind of FCC. They believe they may have to get a different kind of FCC approval to actually get it through, and no company has ever received that level of approval. But they do have approval on their like inductive near field stuff. And the advantage to Apple may be using that, if they do at any point in the future plan to use Energys technology, is I believe the technology that's used in the low range, the contact version, would is upgradable. Like you could, if they got transmitters out, it would be able to use the other Energist technology, the true wireless.
Yes,
charging.
That's true.
Yes. So they may want to build it in just for future proofing so that they can, you know, let the next generation phone, although that would be very un-Apple-like, right? Apple would probably just go with some other technology and then make you buy a new phone to get the new stuff.
Yeah.
But if they want to be nice.
Well, it certainly doesn't save them any money to quote-unquote future-proof that way.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, okay, so the Energist thing, the version that Apple could use today is the version that would be appropriate for the Apple remote, not the iPhone, because the power output is too low.
For that's what this guy's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Apple has also said in the past that they think that radio-based power transmission is highly inefficient, and I would assume that's probably the case. They're concerned
about... Yeah, that's
about,
what Jeff's sort of talking about, right? It charges too slowly, too,
yeah, so,
too
so
low at the, a at level.
Yeah, so you can ramp up the power output so that it's more reasonable for devices that need more power, like an iPhone, to charge. But you're basically paying double for your power because it takes about twice as much power than you get because of what's lost through the radio transmission.
Yeah, I think the other thing about this though is people are sort of thinking about it as the way to charge a device, and it's really not going to be what it is. It's going to be a like passive charging technology that supplements your regular charging cycle, right? So I'm thinking about like all the times I'm walking around my house with my Apple Watch or sitting at my desk with my Apple Watch. I don't have it on the charger, but I'm not actively using it. If there was something sitting on my desk radiating power, and even if it was charging it at an incredibly low rate, it's going to significantly extend my overall battery life for my Apple Watch. Mm-hmm. Even if it's not taking it from, you know, 0 to 100% charge, if it's adding 5, 10, 20, 25% in a given day, that's, you know, 25% more battery I have every day, or 50% more, whatever it might be.
Right.
So I don't think Apple's ever going to get rid of like contact charging or, you know, plugging in as the main charging vehicle, because you're going to be able to charge way faster than any of these other technologies. But I could see them implementing both in a way that, okay, it's got, you know, you've got a choice. You charge it up through the contact-based wireless charging when you need a quick charge, but also we're going to support this system, which if you're in an area that has Energist transmitters, hey, you're going to get extra power for free.
Yeah.
Just walking around.
That would be really cool. I like that idea.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Okay. So, yeah, and I guess they could put it into like the Apple TV or the next gen, whatever.
I think it would be great for the Apple Watch if you can. I don't know how big the receiver parts are, but.
No, I mean the transmitter, the Apple TV or the next gen AirPort or whatever would be the transmitter.
Apple TV is not big enough. That's the other problem is, have you seen the transmitters?
Oh, yeah, they're big.
Like the one that goes 10 to 15 feet is the size of a TV TV sound bar.
Yeah. See, that also sounds unlike Apple.
To go 2 to 3 feet, yeah. It's imagine a sound bar about that would be appropriate for like an iMac. That goes 2 to 3 feet.
Yeah. Oh, and the other interesting thing that that pointed out was, you know, we've been talking about how they're moving from the metal enclosure they have now to an all glass enclosure because they want to do the contactless charging. But Energist's technology would not require that change. Only an inductive charging system would.
There you go. And there's your smoking gun for what we'll have for charging on the next iPhone.
Yeah, very likely. I mean, because otherwise, we all had iPhones 4 and 5, and we know that the you know, glass backs break. So the less glass, the better. And right. I don't think that
and,
Apple.
Yeah. And for, like you said, for the Energos Energys system, the glass back is not necessary.
Yeah. So iOS 10.3 beta was released with a lot of goodies. I'm impressed with this beta.
This is like a big update. I can't believe this is a point release.
I know. Yeah. So starting with the, I guess, the most innocuous, one of my favorite features is they have redone the whole idea of your accounts in the settings app, which is, I mean, I saw that and I said, heck yeah, I'm going to update right now. It sounds great, because it's kind of devolved into like three or four different panels over the years for your various, you know, your Apple ID, your iCloud, your this, your that. Where do you go to get to the thing that you want? Now there's one big giant setting at the top of settings above airplane mode, between airplane mode and settings, search, where you click on it. It shows your Apple ID, your iCloud, your iTunes and App Store stuff, your which account you're using for iCloud, which account you're using for the App Store, your picture.
Which is brilliant. Why didn't they do that years ago?
I think someone just had a brainstorm and realized, holy crap, we could do this. They list iCloud, iTunes. You can set up family sharing. It shows all your devices. It tells you, you know, if you click on one of your devices, which is cool. So it says, you know, for example, I'm doing it on my iPad. It says, you know, this iPad 2. However, you can see, you know, I see that my phone, if my iPhone is on, I apparently don't have iCloud backup turned on, which is concerning. My, you know, it tells me the serial number. It tells me if my Apple Pay is turned on. Yeah, it tells me all the Apple Pay stuff. There's tons of great information in here. Yeah, it's really cool. So I love that. And I'm really happy someone had that idea and went, why haven't we done this? APFS.
The Apple file system is coming.
Yeah.
The Apple file system is coming. Consequently, if you are going to run the beta, like,
backup your stuff
even more than normal, you should have a really good backup.
I live dangerously, so I didn't do any of that. I just updated, and it worked just fine.
Go you.
So Apple file system, it's you know, different from HFS Plus, which is what, like 30, 40 years old now?
Well, it's optimized for the kinds of devices and the kinds of things that we do now.
Mm-hmm. And Apple does plan to move macOS to APFS.
Oh yeah, the whole system's moving. Yeah, so at some point
there should be a lot of speed gains, fewer errors, that sort of thing. You know, if you're duplicating information, they do some magic where they don't actually duplicate it. It's just like a metadata duplication, and it's just lots of cool stuff going on. I think there's a like an Ars Technica article on that. I'll find it and I'll throw it in the show notes, because
it also has like built-in encryption and stuff like that.
Yes.
The security too gets stronger with the new operating system.
Yeah, let me. So there's a WWDC 2016 video presentation. I'm going to throw a link to that in the show notes so you can check out all the goodies in APFS. And apparently you don't need an account to pull that up. So find my
one-handed
AirPods.
Floating iPad keyboard. What?
Oh, yeah. One-handed floating iPad keyboard, which is one of those Stephen Trofton Smith finds that nobody can use.
Yeah, hooray for features we can't use.
Yeah, so who knows if that's ever going to be a thing. But it reminded me that split keyboard is still a feature.
Yeah. The only time I ever hear about that is when I have clients or like people who are like, my iPad keyboard's all messed up. I don't know how to fix it. It's like broken. It won't go down anymore. It's like stuck on the screen and it's halfway up and I don't understand.
Yeah, like, it's kind of nice.
You split the keyboard by accident. Let me help you.
Yeah.
I split the keyboard. Does that mean I voided my warranty?
Merge and dock.
Yeah. Find my AirPods. Now we know why
my AirPods.
They they killed that that
app. They Sherlocked my pick.
Yeah, they Sherlocked your pick. I mean, it was like a day old pick. It was a hardly a Sherlock, but I guess
no, it's technically a Sherlock.
Okay, technical Sherlock. But I think we can all agree that it's better to have it in Find My iPhone and supported by Apple.
Yeah, but it's really not the same at all.
It's not, because it's even not
with
the same.
Find My AirPods, you have to know you it's not going to guide you to the area of your house where the AirPods are.
It doesn't matter. I don't think it matters as much because you get to play a sound. You can direct your AirPods to play a sound.
But if you dropped them and they're 50 feet away from you, are you really going to hear that?
I can't tell you. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. Probably not.
So the cool thing about the AirPod Finder app was it would actually get you in the area. And so my thing is like Apple should steal that as well and build that in. And that way, because where the AirPod Finder app broke down is once it would get you to the area, but then it was up to you to try and hunt in that small, you know, area to try and figure out where they actually were. Combine that with this, the audio thing. So now you can get to the actual area where they are based on, I don't know how it was doing it. Signal strength is the only thing. Bluetooth signal strength is the only thing I could think of. And then now play the sound, right? Because now you're close by. Now you're going to actually hear something and
that be makes able sense.
To pinpoint it. I don't know. I haven't tried this feature yet. Maybe it works like that. It does show you a kind of like a GPS thing. But like if it's just showing me, oh, they're in your house. Well, great. They're in my house. Now I guess I can play the sound and walk around and hopefully find them.
Well, that's how it works with your phone. Right, if you're trying to,
but I'm thinking more outdoor. But the phone has a much larger speaker. Like, how loud is this little tiny sound that's coming out of these AirPods?
It's actually pretty darn loud. Yeah, I've tried it. My warning is, don't try doing this if they're in your ears.
I was just about to ask about that because what if you have
hearing loss?
You know, like someone else has your
Will it work if they're in your ears?
Yeah, it does. It does.
What? Okay. Apple.
Now that
engineers.
Seems like a bad idea.
Wait, they may Apple, need to tweak it that. Seems like a bad idea. And also, Apple engineers, I seem to remember that they can detect when they're in my ear or not.
I seem to remember that too.
So if they can detect if they're in your ear,
it's a beta.
The assumption is one might be missing. So. But then can't they just play the signal in the one that's not in your ear?
So that's why I know it'll play when it's in your ear. Because I was curious about exactly that scenario. And turns out it plays both. Now, so one of the cool things about this feature is you can say, hey, play sound. But you can, you know, you hit play sound and it starts playing the sound. It will, you can mute the right or the left if you want.
So this is what they like should what do is just have it automatically check to see if something's in your ear. And if at least one of the AirPods is in your ear, that AirPod, you'll hear Siri's voice saying,
it's in your ear, dum-dum.
It's in your ear. Maybe and then the other one beeps.
Yeah, maybe the problem, to be honest, though, maybe the problem is it's a proximity sensor, right? It's not really much more sophisticated than that. So if the AirPod was maybe covered by something...
Oh,
like a piece of clothing or something.
Very, very true. That's that's why. There you go. You solved it.
Would it. Probably still, yeah.
You solved it.
Like
Thank
it
you.
Can't tell that it's up against your flesh. It's just like, oh, the sensor is
totally
the proximity sensor is covered.
Yeah. So we're close to having to wrap up, but developers can now in iOS 10.3 they can respond to customer reviews. Which is pretty cool. So if you say, hey, this, you know, it crashes when it opens and you see those reviews, well, the developer can actually respond to it. And then you'll get an update saying, hey, you should try XYZ. And you can actually see that little response. It's not a threaded conversation thing. It's just like reply once kind of deal. And then you can update your reviews. The other interesting thing that's coming in 10.3 is Apple is finally creating an API or a method for developers to bug you about submitting reviews for their apps. Now, the reason that's good is because their plan is to eventually enforce a rule that would keep developers from doing that independently. So using some other method that is not Apple. So number one, this allows you to leave your feedback without having to jump out of the app. So you get a little panel, you can submit your feedback with a review if you want, and you stay in the app the entire time. Apple will limit it to 3 times a year, and at some point down the road, developers will not have their own, they will not be allowed to have their own method for bugging you about reviews. So it will be more enforced, it'll be a better experience overall, and I think it's a good idea. Apple's taking charge of this annoying thing that's been going on for years.
Finally.
Yeah. So yeah, anyway, let's do our picks. And Jeff, I'm guessing your pick is some pair of snowshoes.
You know, yeah, it ought to be. And for anyone that's keeping track, my favorite brand is Atlas. But I do have an actual iOS pick.
All right.
Which is, it's the Netflix app. Even though I'm annoyed with them for the way they're handling the whole TV app thing, the fact that they added the ability to download content to your iOS device,
ooh, yeah,
is really cool. That was a really nice feature to finally see on my iPad Pro and of course on other iOS devices. But yeah, that's pretty awesome. So the Netflix app, because you can download content now.
I took advantage of that when I went back home. I said, oh, I know I'm gonna be on the plane. I want to watch, you know, 10 episodes of 30 Rock or something. And I just, you know, hit the little download button and it worked perfectly. It was awesome. It was a great experience. So I'm really happy they've done that.
Yeah, me too.
So Adam, what's your pick?
I am picking a really cool game that has an incredibly fun and funny soundtrack and just concept and everything, especially if you are a fan of Dungeons and Dragons. It's a game called The Guild of Dungeoneering. And the basic concept is you have what looks like a, you know, graph paper, paper map, and you get little characters and then you get cards and you send them out on adventures. So you're kind of like playing the dungeon master and you're sending them out and they have a quest on each level and you have a set of cards that you get and you have like attack cards and monster cards and treasure cards and things like that. And you are trying to complete the quest. There's battles that you'll have to fight creatures. And then that's when the cards come into play. You've got to play cards in certain orders and try and figure out, am I going to defend or am I going to attack? And then at the end, you always come back to like the guild, kind of like the town that you're in. And as you're playing the game, you'll add more and more rooms to your town. So when you die, for example, a graveyard gets added and your characters end up in the graveyard. There will also be training grounds where you can make your characters more powerful. There'll be taverns. There's, you know, of course, like a blacksmith shop where you can get more equipment or improve your equipment and stuff like that. So
I love the art in this.
Yeah, it's all hand-drawn, like paper sketch kind of stuff. And I was trying to find a price.
Is it on your phone or is it a phone game?
I play on the iPad, but
okay. I couldn't even find it.
I texted you the link to the website.
Yeah, it's not helpful.
Guild of Dungeoneering.
Buy from one of our retail partners.
It is available on the App Store. So just look for Guild of Dungeoneering on the App Store.
$5.
$4.99?
Yeah.
And then they do now have a couple of expansions. So that you get the base game, and they've added an expansion called Pirate's Cove. And I think there's another one called Ice Cream Headaches.
Ice Cream Headaches.
Headaches, yeah. I don't know if that's available on iOS yet, but I know Pirate's Cove just became available.
Cool.
So and it has great original like music that's just hilarious that goes along with the whole game. So the soundtrack to me is almost worth the price of the game itself.
All right, Guild of Dungeoneering, it's $4.99. So my pick is the iPhone 7 leather case from Apple. Finally got I've been using my the leather case from Apple for my iPhone 6 on my iPhone 7.
You hacked.
I hacked it. Yeah, with
you hacked it.
By hacked, I mean literally I hacked at it with a pair of scissors.
Cut it with an X-Acto knife.
No, pair of scissors. It was real shitty.
Oh.
It was bad. It looked really really bad. I mean, at that point it was like, who cares? I've got this thing. I'm not going to sell it. And, whatever. So, but finally I decided to be a civilized human being and got one that is made for my phone. And the primary reason I didn't just stick it out, because it worked just fine, is because the new ones have these nice mechanical buttons on the outside.
Yes.
That totally makes it worth it.
Nice.
The metal buttons are awesome. Makes it great for, changing the volume when it's in your pocket, for example, which is a great feature for us masochists who use AirPods. And yeah, I really like it. It's a really nice case. The Saddle Brown. At the Saddle Brown.
Hey, that's the one that I have.
And
I have the dark blue.
It ages very nicely, the Saddle Brown.
I noticed that. Yeah, mine's already on its way to looking nice.
I'm getting this nice little patina around the edges and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So $45. Totally reasonable price. I was expecting something more. I was expecting it to be like $60. So
the only disadvantage, I've dropped mine a couple times and it's survived just fine. I will say, as far as if you need a real protective case, this is not going to provide you a ton of protection. It provides minimal protection.
It's held up under the drops that I've had, which is good. But right. Yeah, it's not as protective as some others.
Well, it's not like an OtterBox. And for what it's worth, I had my 6 for 2 years. With the Apple leather case on it and dropped it, 100, 200 times, I'm sure. Probably. And
again,
it held up.
Depends
no problem.
On how you are. I'm just letting our audience know if protection is what you're going for.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, this is not.
If you're a party girl, you may want to get an OtterBox. But if you occasionally drop your phone on like carpet, and every once in a while maybe some like wood floors or something, you might be okay. So
I mean, I've dropped it on concrete. It's just if it lands on anywhere toward the face instead of the back or the corner or the side, yeah, all bets are off.
You better be praying.
Yeah.
So you can find the picks, all of our picks, and the show notes at theiosshow.com. Review the show on iTunes. Give us a star rating, tell a friend, and if you have any feedback about the show, send it to feedback@theiosshow.com. That's the email address. And advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, and at Mattcast on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Sure thing.
And Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, the TMO Daily Observations podcast. That's every weekday. Check that out. And at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
Every single week. It's awesome.
And I am at Michael Johnston on Twitter, so you can tweet me there. And with that, I'll see you next time on The iOS Show.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.
Yuck, yuck, no.